1027 Business with Michael Avery.
It's day 665 of the lockdown that never wants to end. The brand father, Jeremy Sampson, MD of Brand Finance Africa, is on the line. And Jeremy, we've almost got as many things to talk about as days of lockdown. Let's start with Tongaat, sugar and spice. It's really quite sad to see a South African icon go this way.
Hello, Michael. Good to be with you. 3 weeks gone of the year, yes. And wow, isn't it happening? Tongaat Hewlett's, you know, only, what, 4 or 5 years ago, it was one of the big four brands that exist out of KZN, alongside Mr. Price and Spar and Aspen. Those were the four big brands out of South Africa's top 50. And look what's happened to it. And I think this is just the beginning of the unraveling of the whole thing. Now, we've all known for a long, long time that it was in deep trouble. But there's been a real twist to events, hasn't there, just in the last week or so?
Yeah, just in the last week. This week, we've had that emergency general meeting that went ahead on Tuesday, chatting to the various shareholder activists who've been agitating for that to be delayed, the likes of Dave Willem and Harry Smith and Chris Logan. That, and even Warren Chapman of Perisic, they were all in concert here in their damnation and condemnation of it, saying, one, it's far too hastily convened. You announce this thing while everyone's on a beach sunning themselves somewhere over the quiet period in December. And how many times have we seen it, Jeremy? Whenever you want something to fly under the radar, that's when you announce a scheme. And then to say that they desperately need the money, and to have the CEO, Gavin Hudson, say that ultimately they were left with a simple choice in terms of raising additional capital. Either it's the rights issue or the alternative is selling off the core sugar assets. I think that's a bit of a specious argument, to be honest, because you've got the claim against Deloitte. They could raise funds that way. And why bring in a partner that seems so tainted at the end of the day as Magister, with its links to the Zimbabwean Rudland family and what is alleged tobacco smuggling for years, allegedly big backers of ZANU-PF and Robert Mugabe, and we know what he did in Zimbabwe. It's just out of the fire and into the frying pan.
Well, absolutely. But when you've got people like that lurking in the shadows, you and I know that stuff goes on over the Christmas period in the Southern Hemisphere, and in the Northern Hemisphere, it happens in August when everyone else is meant to be on holiday. You know things are going to happen, and that's where I'm absolutely amazed that the powers that be weren't keeping a tight watch on this. Now, to say, oh, we're on holiday, or they're doing it sneakily, well, if you were in their shoes, wouldn't you do it that way as well? And you slip it through so fast that we say, wow, you know, it's now too late, but it's happened. It's signed off. It's done.
Well, that is the thing. It's a done deal. And questions, I think, must be asked of now the Rudlands. What do they want to do with this asset? And surely they need to respond to the raft of allegations that have been leveled against them. Various NGOs, even Johan van Nochrenberg, the forensic investigator, former forensic investigator for SARS, wrote about it in his various books, Tobacco Wars. And so they really need to come clean on all of that. And at a time where, I mean, let's face it, corporate
Michael,
governance.
I'm sorry. I'm going to challenge you. Why have they got to come clean? This is the way they've behaved. This is the way they operate. People know they've been bringing in tobacco illicitly for years, and nothing has happened. It's just business as usual for them. They're thumbing their nose at the authorities. And if they can keep getting away with it, that's what they'll keep on doing, surely. Or are we being naive here?
Well, we've got to ask then why the PIC is supporting this particular rights issue as well as the custodian of government employees' pension funds. It certainly makes a mockery of any talk about ESG and all of that. And we've got another big corporate scandal in Unilever as well, another CEO under siege there, and fresh off the collapse of its effort to buy GlaxoSmithKline's consumer division, Unilever again finding itself the target of investor criticism.
Well, it is fascinating that, you know, last week, Barry Smith of Fundsmith, who I think is the biggest fund manager in the UK, challenged Unilever because their share price had gone down 9.5% last year, to be accurate, 9.4%. This year, they were rebuffed on GSK on Monday, the consumer goods side of things, trying to bid 50 million. The share price went down another 4% on top of that 9.5. Now, I'm not sure where it is today, but their performance is terrible. Now, in fact, this morning, I was actually on an African investment conference that was taking place. And one of the speakers, in fact, was the vice president finance for Africa of Unilever. And she starts talking about, we are a purposeful organization. We do things through brand purpose. Well, this is precisely Barry Smith's point, that they're so into purpose and the environment and all sorts of things that they're actually taking their eye off the ball. And their ball should be to make profit and make money for its investors. After that, yes. But you know, this world is vicious when it comes to not getting returns. Mm-hmm. And I'd have thought the CEO of Unilever is in grave danger of losing his job after his performance lately.
I think it's a big trend that we're going to see ratchet up this year. The pushback against all this talk around ESG, and one can understand why when the pendulum has swung so far away from the core purpose of an organization. And what is it? You know, the primacy of the shareholder model has withstood the test of time because it is so clear in what it is trying to achieve. It's trying to achieve a return greater than your cost of capital. And to come back to Tongaat, I mean, Tongaat has been generating returns on capital of way below its cost of capital for the last 20 years. It's only that when Peter Stauder and co. were fudging the books that it would look like it was profitable, and that company destroyed shareholder value at an unparalleled rate. And that's also why I think perhaps Mr. Hudson is being rather specious. I mean, because he could sell those sugar businesses and return that money to long-suffering shareholders. Instead, what do? They go and dilute those shareholders right out of existence. Again, caveat emptor when you list on anything or invest on anything in the JSE, Jeremy. Let's talk about something a little bit more fishy, though. And it's fishy for an altogether different reason. Everyone's been talking about the fact that fish paste and Wedwo are going the way of the dodo. Are they really, or is this just a clever marketing ploy to get everyone buying the last few tins or bottles of the stuff, and then when you've got all the media swooning about you and talking about you, say, right, we're going to keep the brand on the shelves. Don't worry, it's not going anywhere. How do you read it?
Well, they're both brands of over 90 years, aren't they? They belong to Pioneer Holdings, which people will remember was bought by Pepsi, the big American group, about 2 years ago. Now, when you buy an organization or a company, one of the things you look at is the value of the brands. And I'm sure values were put on these two brands. So I'm saying, is it a marketing ploy? Is it a tactic? What is it? And I haven't a clue. But you certainly don't just close them down and throw them in the rubbish bin. No, to me, you sell them off, you auction them. These brands have got huge equity and a huge following. But then the other question is, well, if they're not so profitable today, why not? And I would argue that perhaps because they haven't been marketed enough, they haven't been invested in enough. Some people say they're old person's brands, not for young people. Well, then that's a marketing problem. That's a marketing challenge, that the marketers didn't keep the brand relevant. And you and I know we talk about brand relevancy all the time. You lose relevancy with your stakeholders, and then it's a spiral to, well, close it down.
Yeah, absolutely. And it reminds me of what we learned from the Distill announced circular this week. There's more detail on this buyout from Heineken. And in Capvin, it was always suspected that the whiskey business was the real money spinner, but it's actually the gin business. And I find that quite interesting that South Africans really do love their gin much more than they love their whiskey. But as you pointed out in a note to me earlier today, what stood out for you was what the advisors got paid. That's enough to drive any shareholder to drink.
Well, it is, you know, absolutely huge figures. And as I said to you earlier, Heineken is bound to sell off bits and pieces that either aren't profitable or don't fit into their master plan. We know that they're looking at Savannah because they want the volume, and Savannah's had a huge distribution problem. I happen to be quite partial to a glass of Savannah coming from Somerset and being a cider man, and I haven't been able to get it for about the last 4 weeks in the flavor I want. And they've finally admitted, apparently, to having supply problems. But they're bound to sell off bits and pieces. I'd have thought the wine bits. I'd heard for a long time that whiskey, whilst people love it, who drink whiskey, saying it's not profitable. Mm. And there must be a few bits and pieces that are available. So if I was Edward Snell or someone like that, I'd be knocking on their door if they aren't already.
Yeah, I also love a good scrumpy Jack as well every now and again. Speaking of good ciders, there's a great little pub down in Clarence that does their own cherry cider as well. Very famous little restaurant slash pub over in Clarence. If you can get out of town for a while. And I certainly felt like getting out of town with what's going on at the Joburg City Council. I mean, when are the adults actually going to be let into the room to govern in this country? It's an absolute farce.
Well, when I look at the disruption and the misbehavior, if that's the right word, of the ANC when they don't like things in Durban, in Johannesburg, and added to that now with the EFF, and often they're not in power, so they're actually in full reign. And then looking at the behavior of the EFF just yesterday, walking into restaurants and threatening the owners. Well, by what authority? By what right? Why, to start with, are the proprietors letting them into the place? You know, do you remember the old days where there was a sign over the door, right of admission reserved?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't let these guys anywhere near me. And by what right are they doing this? And as someone said, you know, I think it was fact, Feral Huffergy or someone like that said, are we going to put gold stars on people working in restaurants who aren't South Africans? You know, it's getting absolutely stupid. But the authorities, as usual, are nowhere to be seen, and they're not imposing themselves. I see the Department of Labour has put out a memo rather late today warning political parties to behave. But again, it's too late, and good old Julius has had his day in the sun.
Yeah, well, it's always after the horse has bolted that we tend to close those particular stable doors. Speaking of stable doors, big doors are being opened by Microsoft into the multi-billion-dollar gaming industry. This is an acquisition that on every level just makes your eyes water. $68.7 billion. What's that, like a trillion rand, almost in cash? To buy Activision Blizzard. It's one of the biggest game makers in the world. If you're a big gamer, you'll recognize Call of Duty and World of Warcraft. And it's shot across the bows of the likes of Sony. Microsoft is the famed Xbox maker. If you don't like Xbox, you play PlayStation and you like the Sony games, and there's always been this war. But I was really struck by comments from CEO Satya Nadella at the time, who said this deal gives them access into what is the most exciting growth area in entertainment on any platform in the world is gaming. He reckons gaming is going to outstrip live sports. It's going to outstrip going to the movies, box office, Netflix, all of that. We're all going to be in the metaverse playing games. Is that a world you want to live in, Jeremy?
Well, first of all, I have to say, how clever are Microsoft? You know, we were saying earlier about staying relevant, because gamers often are younger people. We also know that over the last couple of years with COVID, people are staying at home. There's been a surge in this as well. So very clever move, getting youngsters on board. And perhaps they're going to try and do like Apple, that once you enter the world of Microsoft, they try and keep you locked in by all their offerings. So it's a fascinating world, but Microsoft understands you have to stay relevant with everyone that you're dealing with. And then once you've got them on board, you hang on to them. Better the client you've got than the client you think you might be able to get down the road.
I wish Cricket South Africa understood that about South African sports fans as well. The Proteas, mind you, are doing a really good job of putting all of the admin mess and the you know, the racial issues and the, you know, the inquiry into what was going on with Team Unity to one side and saying, guys, what we're here to do is to play cricket. And boy, did they play cricket against India in that test series. And now in that first ODI as well, Themba Bavuma showing that he's quite the astute captain. This Cricket South Africa farrago, I think, has galvanized this team, and hopefully we'll see much more to come from them. Missed the commentary on Radio 2000, though.
Absolutely. You know, often moving around, I used to have the ball-by-ball on my car, and it was fantastic knowing what was going on. So even though there's been a series against the number one side in the world and we've just beaten them, I've hardly seen any of it. And I think that's rather sad. But you know, on the back page of Business Day today, my old friend Vince van der Baal has written his, I think he writes a column every 2 weeks. And it's well worth a read because it's called Proteus lay down leadership marker for rudderless cricket South Africa. And this is where the players and the team around the players, the coaches, etc., are getting the job done. They're cutting the mustard. And, you know, where is the leadership from the admin side? I'm sure they've been watching all the games and enjoying all the luxuries that you get when you sit in a nice box. But who's leading Cricket South Africa? And the players are showing the way, and well done to them. And they need to be applauded and lauded. And I'm not sure that's happening by far enough at the moment.
Well, I know what I want to point out, though, as well, is that what we've been seeing is the boxes that have been utilized in the grounds where regular spectators are not allowed because of COVID regulations. And that kind of sticks in the craw a little bit. I understand why, but I think it is time for Cricket South Africa to review that and to start to allow spectators back into the ground so we can enjoy and applaud this fantastic team that is developing from the ground up, so to speak, and long may it last, especially against an Indian team that has played hard cricket, but boy, they've also made a lot of enemies along the way with the kind of cricket that they play, and never being censored by the ICC. And we know the BCCI, really, they are they dictate the game because of their sheer size, along with Australia and England, and everyone else has just got to toe along. So whenever one of those three gets beaten, it's always a good day, Jeremy.
A great, great day. And when you look at the calibre still of the Indian side with Mr. Kohli there, etc., you know, to watch players of that calibre is an absolute privilege, and you don't often get that opportunity, and sadly we haven't had that opportunity even though they've been here.
Jeremy Sampson, with the Brands and Sense as always. Jeremy, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Michael, and you.
Well, that's a wrap for the show tonight.
Hot 102.7 Business with Michael Avery.